From Leawood to Liberty, pit bulls have the dubious distinction of being the most banned dog in the Kansas City metro area. That's because tragic dog attacks have prompted local communities to develop breed-specific ordinances aimed at preventing death and injury. This is Central Standard, and I'm Susan Wilson. Today, we'll explore how well these bans work and whether certain breeds of dogs are indeed more aggressive by nature, and what kinds of programs have been shown to help dog owners prevent dog attacks. Later on in the show, we'll talk about a new boutique hotel that's opened in the West Plaza on the site of the old West Edge development, designed by architect Moshe Safdie. But first, let's talk dogs and the so-called bully breeds, dogs that are thought to be naturally aggressive and therefore dangerous. Joining us by phone is Don Bauermeister, assistant city attorney for the city of Council Bluffs, Iowa, and author of the amicus brief for dogbites.org. In a few minutes, we'll hear from Anthony Barnett, who opposes breed bans. But first, I want to start with you, Don. Don, exactly what is a bully breed?
Well, the way that we've crafted our language here concerning pit bulls and bully breeds, we specifically mention a few different breeds by name. I've seen other jurisdictions, including our neighbor just across the river in Omaha, include several breeds above and beyond what we've included. So we're talking about the American Pit Bull Terrier, American Staffordshire Terrier, and their related cousins. But I've seen some jurisdictions even include American Bulldogs. But that definition, Susan, can include several different recognized breeds, whether it's through the American Kennel Club, the United Kennel Club, or the American Dog Breeders Association. There's really three major repositories. There's really three major kennel clubs that we look for those definitions.
Now, but what if the dog is a mix?
The way that our ordinance reads, Ms. Wilson, is in order for our ordinance to be effective, we have to see in person that the dog 50% or more. You know, so we're looking at a majority of the characteristics, and that's a call that's made not only by myself at times, but it's also made by the chief animal control officer. Who has years of experience of dealing with all kinds of dogs. As you can imagine, that's what he does for a living at the animal shelter. So the dog has to show a majority of the characteristics. And we look for, again, we look at those kennel clubs that I mentioned earlier. We look to see how do they define their breed. How do they define American Pit Bull Terrier or American Staffordshire Terrier and its related cousins. So we have to see a majority of the characteristics.
Well, let's put this into perspective. How much of a problem really is this? What do the statistics say about the dangerousness of certain breeds?
Well, I don't know, Susan. I mean, are you aware that over 20 people have been killed by pit bulls this year in the United States?
No.
I mean, and I'm sure that you're not. And that's another part of this story, which is really disconcerting to me. You know, if there's a shark attack off the coast of Australia or off the coast of Florida, it's national news. It's on all three major channels and cable channels. But we've had almost two dozen people killed this year by pit bulls in this country, and it's not a national news story.
Well, let me ask you this.
That's what's really upsetting to me.
In 2012 in Kansas City, there were 15 documented pit bull or pit bull mixed breed bites, according to the KCPD. But in the same year, there were 22 reported German Shepherd or German mix bites. Why wouldn't we ban other dogs as well then?
That's a very good question. And my response to that would be this. Pit bulls are unique. They're not created equal. And let me get back to your comments there about the German Shepherds. I don't know of the total dog population in Kansas City. I don't know what the total German Shepherds have always been a very popular breed. So I'm going to go out on a limb and guess that there are more licensed German Shepherd dogs in the community than there are pit bulls. And that's based on experience. Even in our own community here in Council Bluffs, we have, before our pit bull ban, we had many more German Shepherds licensed as pets than we did pit bulls. So that's one thing that you got to take into consideration. For instance, here, our number two biter was Labrador Retrievers. And so everyone says, well, why don't you ban Labrador Retrievers? yeah, they were number two on our bites, okay, but we had hundreds more, if not 1,000 more Labrador Retrievers than we did Pit Bulls. And so you really got to look at the proportionality, right? If Pit Bulls are only making up 5% of your population, but they account for 60% of your attacks, then that's something to look at. Now, also, Susan, what I would tell you is a German Shepherd attack typically, okay, is over as soon as it starts. It's not a sustained attack. And that's where Pit Bulls are unique. I mentioned that earlier. See, Pit Bulls might not start a fight, but they will finish it. We got to remember what they were bred for, and that's to inflict maximum damage and to win in the ring in a dogfighting competition. Okay, so in the Midwest here, we know that retrievers retrieve, pointers point, and genetics matter. Okay, so certainly the way that you raise an animal plays a huge role in how that dog is going to behave. But we cannot discount genetics. I mean, I think people here in the Midwest realize that we're not planting the same seed corn or the same beans that our grandpas were planting. We don't. When we go and buy livestock, we're looking at genetics. Genetics matter.
Well, let me ask you this. So from your perspective, why should a community consider a breed ban? And, you know, are there other options that they could consider?
Sure.
In addition,
yes, ma'am,
to that?
Yes, ma'am. There's plenty of options out there. Some communities, I think, had a lot of success with mandatory spay and neuter. In California, we've seen a lot of sterilization laws, which basically you're trying to put an end to the backyard breeders, because clearly animal shelters are busting at the seams, putting pit bulls down across the country because they're abandoned and otherwise not wanted. So trying to put an end to some of the backyard breeding and controlling the population through sterilization is one thing that you can do. Another thing that you can do is require insurance. Now, I want you to understand with our breed-specific law here in Council Bluffs, we did not say existing pit bulls have to leave our community. We quote-unquote, grandfathered them in and allowed them to stay. We just attached a bunch of strings to that. The dog had to be in a secure enclosure if it was left outside. It had to be muzzled in public. You had to carry proof of liability insurance. It's got to be on a short 4-foot lead, not a 20-foot lead, etc. So we did allow for existing pit bulls to stay in our community with a lot of strings attached to that, with the idea 10 to 12 years after the ordinance is enforced that we won't have any new pit bulls in our community, and we won't no longer have pit bulls in our community. So there are options out there.
But what about when the unthinkable happens? And, you know, we've heard of these, you know, publicized situations where an animal harms or kills someone. What are the legal ramifications, Don, when those kinds of things happen?
Well, in terms of, what do you mean legal ramifications? You mean
what happens when an animal hurts someone generally?
Well, I mean, for the victim, it's a life-altering event, obviously, right? I mean, you lost.
But I was more talking about the legal ramifications of the person who has the dog that harmed someone.
Oh, well, unfortunately, this issue comes up, and oftentimes they don't have any insurance. They might be renting a home. They don't have any property, and so you know, in terms of liability, there's really sometimes you're chasing a dead-end street. Now, criminally, depending on where you land on the map, there may be some statutes at the state level which will hold you accountable for that. I mean, I think the classic story is the Diane Whipple case out there in San Francisco, who was killed by a couple Presa Canarios. And ultimately, they prosecuted under some California statute and put those owners in prison. So it really depends, though. Oftentimes, there really isn't. It depends on the statutes. It's kind of state by state, Susan.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 KCUR, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm Susan Wilson, and with us today are Don Bauermeister, Assistant City Attorney for the City of Council Bluffs, Iowa, and author of the amicus brief for DogsBite.org. Later we'll be hearing from Anthony Barnett, who opposes breed bans. Now, a lot of people, Don, they acquire certain breeds of animals for their own personal protection. Maybe they live in an area that they feel is unsafe. Why would you deny these people a way to protect their property and their self?
Susan, pit bulls are not guard dogs. And any pit bull owner that has any reputable credentials will tell you that. I don't know how many breeders of pit bulls I've met. I don't know how many pages of history I've read on pit bulls, but pit bulls should not be used as guard dogs. And anyone who's using as a pit bull as a guard dog is a fool. The reason I say that is a guard dog, like for Shih Tzu's training, they got to know when to stop. Once a pit bull engages, it's hard to get them to stop. They don't let go. The purpose of a guard dog is to bark or to alert. I've got two German Shepherds, Susan, so I think I'm qualified to talk a little about this. My German Shepherds are going to do about five or six things before they bite. They're going to growl. They're going to bark. They're going to show their teeth. They're going to make their hair raise up on their back. They're going to give you about five or six different clues to tell you, hey, you need to back up. What you're doing right now is not good, and something bad might happen if you don't back up. Pit bulls, and this is second nature. Everyone knows this. A pit bull will attack without warning, and this is documented by some of the writers at the ASPCA. They will attack without barking, without growling. We had a girl scalped in Omaha, Nebraska here several years ago, and the dog, with its tail wagging, walked over to the wagon that she was being pulled in and launched its attack. Okay, so there was absolutely no warning prior to an attack. It's like going 0 to 60 in a Ferrari. Okay, you're in the back of your seat. These pit bulls can attack on a whim and give you absolutely no indication that they're about to attack. And that's another thing that differs between them and a German Shepherd that is documented in the writings. And the other thing I want to say about the German Shepherds is they're not killing people, Susan. I mean, they're just not killing people.
Okay. So, Kansas City, what do you think about bans and restrictions on pit bulls and similar breeds? Do they make the community safer? Join the conversation by calling us 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. Well, let's turn now to Anthony Barnett, founder and executive director of the Symbiotic Behavioral Treatment Center and Canine Safety and Tactics. He's a canine safety and tactics specialist. So I have a couple of starting questions for you, Anthony. What's been your experience with pit bulls? You just heard Don talk about his experience and the other so-called bully breeds.
I've been working professionally with dogs for about 10 years. I own a doggy daycare, and through that have become a pack behavior expert and work with law enforcement when they do cruelty seizures and busts and dogfighting busts and evaluating the dogs to determine their safety for placement, as well as I'm currently embedded with the 1910 tactical squad, the SWAT team in Kansas City, and I go out with them on warrants and work on dog tactics on how to respond to dangerous dogs when they serve warrants and evaluate threats and stuff like that.
So what do you think about when you think about a bully breed? Do you consider any dog a bully breed?
Oh, yes, there's certainly breeds. The biggest thing for people to get over is to think that all dogs are breeds. And that's the biggest mistake, really, is that our culture thinks of dogs the way we think of cars, that if you had a 2013 Civic and you liked it, you can go buy another 2013 Civic and it's going to be the same. And people think about dogs that way. And while every breed is a dog, not every dog is a breed. So there's never been this utopian time in our country where every dog was a purebred dog, and now we're just one or two or three generations removed from that. So there's always a certain segment of the population that are purebred or are breeds and mixes, but largely the dogs in our communities and shelters that are not specifically purebred dogs are mutts from mutts from mutts.
So how pervasive do you see the problem of dog safety when it comes to dogs that could be aggressive?
Dogs are always a risk. You know, living with dogs is a risk, so to speak, but they're remarkably safe. Dogs of all breeds are remarkably safe, and they are something that oddly, there's an odd phenomenon when we consider dog safety, that especially when we talk about pit bulls, we consider them from a risk-only perspective, and we don't really give any credence or weight to you know, the benefits or how many live well in our community. And we don't evaluate other things in that risk-only perspective. You know, for instance, when he says 20 people have been killed by pit bulls, how many kids have been killed by their parents? And from a risk-only perspective, why would we ever leave kids with their parents? Now, that's a silly, silly thing to say. It's silly to carry it to that extreme because parents do a lot of good in society, obviously, when they function well. But they do present a bigger risk to their children than any dog or even pit bulls do.
Well, what are some of the problems that you see when people talk about a breed ban? Why are you opposed to them?
You know, after working with dogs for so long and being in communities and working on public safety, it's just become obvious the difficulties with breed bans, how pointless and arbitrary there are. You know, you heard that they look to registry standards to find the physical description of the dog, but then they conveniently don't look at the registry standards for the behavior descriptions of the dog. So then they just get to lump in as many breeds as they do or don't want into it, and it just becomes laborious and unrealistic. And it's just something that through studies and empirical evidence and over the last 30 years, people have found that simply a more effective way to keep a community safe is a behavior-based, you know, breed-neutral law.
Now, when you say a breed-neutral law that's behavior-based, what do you mean?
It means that you're not trying to determine the dangerousness of a dog based on how it looks or wasting resources trying to argue if a dog is 49 or 50% a breed or not a breed because it has short hair and muscles or something. It just says, you know, based on the behavior of this dog before it bites anybody, we feel like it represents a threat to the community and we want to take action to keep the community safe.
What do you think in terms of, is there such a thing as a genetically or naturally aggressive dog? As Don pointed out, some have different habits than others that make them more dangerous.
There could be, as far as individual dogs. What there isn't is a dangerous or genetically predisposed to aggression breed. You know, there could be dogs that have a certain genetic mixture that in the right environment of neglect and abuse and under socialization that they would turn aggressive. But that's a statement that you can only make about that dog and that doesn't necessarily transfer over to other breeds.
Well, we're going to take a call this morning from Jamie. Jamie, welcome to Central Standard. You have a question.
Yeah. Are you talking to me?
Yes.
All right. Thanks for taking my call. I'm curious about, I'll tell you my situation. I've got two little kids, a four-year-old and a six-year-old, and there's a boxer across the street that's killed their little lap dog, and it also has broken the leg of their cat. And, you know, we've mentioned to the owners, hey, you know, please don't let your dog out free to run around when you take it for a walk. And so they put a leash on it for a few weeks and then after a while neglect to do that. And so I'm curious, what does a person do in that situation when you've got a dog like that that occasionally is running around like that? And, you know, from the earlier guest, what does he feel is the difference between a boxer and a pit bull? I think this dog is a boxer, but I get the same aggressive feeling from it.
So, and we hadn't talked about that, the dogs that harm other dogs and just seem very threatening. But what would you say about that, Anthony? How would you answer this caller's question?
Ultimately, all of these things are the responsibility of the owners. So if the owners want to have this dog with these tendencies, then they have a duty to the community and to their neighbors to keep the dog safely contained. And there should be laws. I'm not sure which town in the metro area he's in, but there should be laws in effect.
He's in KCMO.
Okay. Then there should be laws in effect, you know, for at-large dogs getting out and escaping that can help him, you know, use the city resources to help educate his neighbors on how to properly contain his dog. That would be a concerning situation for me, you know, but that kind of aggression, to animals doesn't necessarily translate to people, but I would still be concerned about an at-large dog that's demonstrated aggressive tendencies of any kind.
Now, Don, you've probably seen situations like this. How do you weigh in on this question?
What I would tell the caller, if he's still listening, is to take a photograph or a video of that you know, as comfortable, as near as comfortable as you can get to that dog running off leash, because clearly that's a violation of your local ordinances. And then I would get a hold of the city or the county prosecutor who handles those. I'd try to make an appointment and explain to them, you know, your concerns, because they're valid. And that's another thing that we get to here is Americans are irrational about their dog, Susan. So you could have a dog who attacked a kid for no reason and put him in stitches, but they get the one free bite, so then they get to keep their dog after a quarantine. Under state law, they used to keep for about 10 days under a quarantine. And the people just really won't. It's not like the older days. The old days, you just put that dog down, okay? You just have that dog euthanized. Now Americans are so irrational about their dogs, and they're so, I mean, how many times have you met somebody, they say, here's my baby. I'm sorry, that's not a baby, that's a dog, okay? And people really need to shake themselves and pinch themselves. If that dog's already attacked and killed one animal and then attacked and injured another animal, I mean, at what point do you say, you know what, it's too big of a risk?
Mm-hmm. Well, the switchboard here is lighting up. We're going to take another caller, Manuel from Raytown, Missouri. Welcome to Central Standard. And you have something you want to talk about in terms of your pit bull.
Manuel?
Yes, Manuel.
It cut out for a second. I was living with my mom, and I had a pit bull that was my dog, and then she had a lab. And my little kid was about 3 at the time, and he liked to play with the dogs. He grew up around them, and he was pulling their tails, pulling their ears. We also had a boxer. But I would notice a far more aggressive behavior and from the lab. And I would actually have to lab the bare teeth at my kid, and when he would pull on the tail, and the pit bull would just look at him, prompt his head down, and I'd scold the kid. I would always be a little bit more wary of the Labrador biting somebody. And I also had a Corgi, and the Corgi would be more aggressive towards other dogs and people. He would nip at them and bite hands and stuff. And I just think that overgeneralization of a dog breed is a bit dangerous as well as irresponsible, because...
Well, thank you for that comment. And what do you think about this comment that Manuel made, that, you know, not all pit bulls are dangerous, and then some of these other breeds are dangerous, and we can't lump them into all one category?
Are you talking to me, Susan?
Yes, Don.
Look, any dog can bite. All right, you're not going to get an argument from me that says, this dog can't bite or that dog's going to bite. It's not the propensity, okay? It's not the likelihood that a pit bull's going to attack. That's not why we pass breed-specific laws. It's the destruction and the damage that occurs when they have a bad day. So the corgi or the little dog that's nipping and stuff like that, that's not a good thing, but that's not going to give you a life-altering injury, and it's not going to kill you. Now, if a pit bull has a bad day, it's sort of like the difference between a firecracker and a grenade. They're both explosives. If they're handled by the right people, they're safe. But there's a reason why you can't get a grenade, right? Because if you have a bad day with a grenade, you can die.
Now, Anthony, how do you respond?
I've never met Mr. Burmeister. I'm sure he's a lovely gentleman, but he's saying a lot of things that have been said for 30 years. You know, there's not a lot of new ideas here, and it's just the same stuff that's been said since this came up in the 80s, and it's really not proven to be true. You can have certain dogs that cause a lot of damage because they're big and strong, and other dogs that are not going to cause as much damage because they're just not big and strong. So a 25-pound pit bull is simply not going to be able to do as much damage to a person as a 102-pound German Shepherd. That's just not physically possible. They're not, you know, they're still bound by the laws of physics like us. It's still muscle and bones and levers and those sorts of things.
Let's go now to Nell from KCMO, because she has a specific question about being on a bike. Welcome to Central Standard, Nell. You're from KCMO.
Good morning. Hi there. I just had a question. There was a recent attack of a dog on a bicycler out in western Kansas. It wasn't that long ago, maybe a couple weeks ago. And I work at the Fort Leavenworth, and there was a lot of bikers out there, and Kansas City is not known for being very biker-friendly, but the dog issue presents another unique area of concern. This dog attacked the woman as she was riding by, and it was a Rottweiler or a pit bull. But we had a conversation about what is it that you do? What is the response that one should have, especially a biker? You know, a lot of people say if you get a dog that's aggressive and comes in your way, you should stop and, you know, make noises or bark back at the dog, or, you know, to get the dog away from you and let them know that you're not going to be messed with. Or, you know, in her case, she tried to flee from the dog and ended up being bit severely on the leg and had to endure plastic surgery and was life-flighted from her location. So I was just curious what your thoughts were as we come into the age of more bikers on the streets and then, you know, exposure to more animals such as those. What do you do when you come upon a dog like that? Do you try and outrun them, or do you,
well,
you stand your ground?
Let's ask Anthony, since he has expertise in behavior and dogs, what would you tell this caller?
We actually teach this when we go to grade schools about bikes, and usually, well, almost always, fleeing from a dog is the worst thing you can do. Dogs are prey animals by nature, and running from them creates an attractive target. It's, you know, akin to throwing the ball. You know, that's why they want to fetch the ball, because they're chasing it. It's prey. So if you're in that situation, fleeing from the dog is usually worse. You might think that you can outrun the dog on your bike, but you can't. It's always better to face the dog, to confront, so to speak, with your body language, and then dismount your bike and use your bike to keep between you and your dog. That may keep you pinned there for a little while, depending on how interested you are to the dog, but at some point you're going to become boring to the dog, and just keeping the bike between you can deter the attack.
We're going to take a quick break. When we return, we'll continue our conversation about breed bans. You can call in and join the conversation at 816-235-2888. That's 235-2888. Central Standard returns in just a minute. Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Susan Wilson. We're continuing our discussion today on breed-specific legislation or breed bans. Our guests today are Anthony Barnett, founder and executive director of Symbiotic Behavioral Treatment Center. He's a canine safety and tactics specialist. And Don Bauermeister, assistant city attorney for the city of Council Bluffs, Iowa, and author of the amicus brief for dogsbite.org. Now, some states have totally, and this is a question for you, Don, they have banned breed-specific legislation. What do you think is behind the ban of this sort?
That is something that we could go on for hours.
Well, just briefly, because we have a lot of callers, but just very briefly in a nutshell.
Pit bull propaganda machine. I'm not sure how to explain it. But there's big money and possibly game dog, fighting dog, dog fighters behind it, possibly supporting all efforts at state and local levels to prevent breed-specific laws. So, like, if a city is looking at passing a breed-specific law, say a town is going to ban pit bulls, okay, that fax machine for every city council member, for the city clerk, the phone calls, the emails – from all over the country and the world, because like the American Kennel Club, the AKC has a legislative branch to their organization, and they monitor this stuff every day. And so they send out sample letters for somebody who is a pit bull owner to send into their local city councils. So it's a very well-oiled machine, and I call it the pit bull propaganda machine. You turn on the television, and if you didn't know better, if there wasn't 20-some-odd people killed this year by pit bulls, you would think they're just as safe as any other dog. But there's a reason why, and I take exception to Anthony's comment that some of the things I say are nothing new. In the last 30 years, he said back to the 80s, there have been hundreds of cities to ban pit bulls, and that's something new. I mean, 15 years ago, there was only a handful of cities that did anything about pit bulls. And the reason why, Susan, is pretty clear. Because they're seeing the injuries. They're seeing the damage.
Well, here's another question that I have, and I'm going to ask Jessica of Lawrence to ask it. It's about owners and their impact on these bully breeds. Jessica, welcome to Central Standard. You're from Lawrence, And
yes,
you have a comment about owners, dog owners.
Yes, I sure do. Actually, it's more of a comment. I just, you know, listening to the show, I just don't, you know, hear the gentleman saying that, you know, owners need to have more responsibility taking care of their pets. You know, I have two dogs at home, and the way that my vet has told me to train them is to reward with positive behavior and don't punish wrong behavior. Now, don't take that to the extreme, like, you know, don't punish your dog for, you know, biting somebody, but they have such short-term memory that, you know, they respond better to positive, you know, reinforcement. So, you know, if owners take on that, we would have pit bulls that, you know, and other, you know, so-called aggressive dog breeds being, you know, more lovable. And, you know, my dogs are my babies, you know, I mean, I don't have kids right now, but I love them, and they, dogs are so good at showing such unconditional love. And I think humans can also kind of, you know, take from that as well. And they can be such a good example for that.
Well, let's ask our guest, Anthony, what about this? I mean, there are people who say there's no such thing as a bully breed. It's more owner mistreatment, lack of owner responsibility that makes a dog mean like this. What do you think about that statement?
It's always a mixture of nature and nurture. There are certainly dogs that, for whatever reason in their background, before somebody had them or because they just didn't understand how to raise them properly, they just don't turn out with behaviors that we like or find socially appropriate. I mean, that is always a mixture of the two, which is what, you know, that's one of the things that we saw as this came out in the 80s. People just didn't really understand. They believed the sort of mythology of genetic predisposition towards certain things. And you know, we tried the experiment, you know, since 1980 or so, certain towns have banned the certain breeds. And oddly enough, before that, you know, other breeds were viewed the same way, you know, German Shepherds, Rottweilers, Doberman Pinschers, those sorts of things. And as we've come up through the decades and we've learned more about canine behavior, public safety, genetics and things like that, we've learned that it's always a mix of them and that owners do need to play a role. A lot of people don't like to admit it, but there are bad dogs. I mean, that does happen. It's just not as common, and it's always a mixture of things, and usually people have played a role in getting to that end.
But, you know, obviously, Anthony, you're against pit bull bans, but what do you say to a parent of a child, for example, who was killed by a pit bull or another person who's been maimed or harmed? What do you say to someone like that in turn that would make them feel better about public safety?
Well, I would tell them that it's terrible and I can't imagine it. I wouldn't find that an appropriate time, I guess, to talk about my thoughts on public safety, maybe, or dogs. But
I mean, theoretically, that's why the bans are in effect, because people have been hurt. And
right.
So if you're against the ban, what position do you take with people who say, you know, at least the bans try to protect public safety?
Well, this is something that, you know, without an appeal to authority fallacy, this is something that you can easily turn to expert organizations, well beyond myself or any one person, you know, despite accusations of a sort of a dogfighting conspiracy. You can look at the CDC. You can look at the American Veterinary Medical Association, the National Animal Control Association, American Medical Association. You can go to people who study public safety and study these things for a living, and you can look at what's happened over the last 30 years, empirical evidence, the way programs have gone in different cities and who's had luck and who hasn't, and you can find best practices. It's a pretty easy thing to do without too much searching. And it's easy for me to look somebody in the eyes and say unequivocally, with the full weight of that expertise behind me, that, look, I know this is terrible. This is a tragedy. I have a way that we've learned over the years that can help make this community safer. We cannot eliminate risk. We cannot live a risk-free existence despite our culture's efforts to do that. But we can do our best to accept the risk of living with dogs and to get the many benefits of living with dogs if we follow these rules that and practices that these people have laid out.
Okay, we're going to go to Mike in Kansas City, Kansas. And Mike, you had a personal encounter with a pit bull. Welcome to Central Standard.
Yes, my name's Mike.
And if you could just briefly pose your question or your comment.
Okay, well, just by their very nature, pit bulls are predispositioned to be really a super aggressive dog. I was told, and I don't think I'm far off from this, they're originally bred to either take on bears or bulls. So if you're looking at what they had to go up against as far as another beast, you'd be a badass, too, if you were that size and had to take on something of one of those creatures. That's what I was told. I've heard that more than once. I don't think it's no old wives' tale.
And you said you had to shoot a pit bull to defend yourself?
Well, I was concerned because this dog had locked eyes with me over about 300 feet away. And right away, I realized, looking at the breed, I knew it wasn't no German Shepherd or Rottweiler or any of them other aggressive dogs. And I knew because I've seen pit bulls before. And so I get near my door, you know, and watch. And it came running almost 300 feet. I didn't provoke this dog whatsoever. It just saw me and decided he was going to charge like hell and try to defend the whole block as his territory, I guess. And after three of these encounters where he would run back to where he was hiding out in this foundation at his house, mind you, this dog was with a female. This was a male charging me, but they were breeding stock, and somebody had dumped them in Wyandotte County, which is illegal to possess pit bulls. But after three or four times of this, I got fed up, and I thought, I can't get nothing done as long as this dog's doing this. So I got my shotgun out, and next time he'd done that, he charged and then stopped 10 feet away. I shot him, and he didn't even put him down. He was running around in circles.
Well, let's let our guests respond.
More people get killed by cars than get killed by bicycles.
Let's let our guest respond. This man took things in his own hand. What happened here?
Well, I mean, there's certainly different cultural practices and values when you go from urban to more rural areas or different parts of the country. So I guess I can't comment to that specifically, but I can comment, you know, like at the beginning of the call when he says that these are an aggressive breed and then named several other aggressive breeds, and that's a phenomenon that I call microwave experts, and dogs really seem to bring that out, that everybody's just knows. Everybody seems to know with dogs. And Google is not a source, and newspapers are not a source. So for somebody to make a statement like that, it doesn't really come from any scientific authority, but it's something a lot of people latch onto and start to repeat, and it's where a lot of these myths come from.
So, Don, this caller had a upfront and close encounter with a pit bull. But do these breed bans then give people a false sense of security, since something like this could happen anywhere, that they're safer because the breed ban exists?
Well, the breed ban does protect people because we slowly but surely are reducing the numbers of pit bulls in our town, right? I mean, we're not allowing it. The first thing you got to do is stop the flood, right? You got to stop the water from leaking, right? So we put a the first thing we do is say, all right, if your pit bull's here right now in 2004, that's fine. You can stay here in 2005 with all these strings attached. But from 2005 forward, we're not allowing you to move into this town with a pit bull, okay? So you stop. You get control of the numbers that you have existing. That's the first thing you got to do, all right? Then you deal with those individually, one at a time, with all the other restrictions that we place on them. Secure enclosure, muzzled, spayed, neutered, insurance coverage, licensing fee, all that stuff. So I don't think that gives you a false sense of security. I think, Council, we've reduced and eliminated pit bull attacks in this community, and we didn't have to hire extra staff. I mean, so it's worked here.
So, Anthony, if you were to kind of summarize what you think bully breed bans do or don't do and what you would recommend in terms of handling so-called dangerous dogs, just in a nutshell, what would you recommend?
Well, H.L. Mencken said that for every complex problem, there's an answer that's clear, simple, and wrong. You know, the breed ban is a very simplistic idea. It seems easy. It sounds good, right? Let's just fix it. We're done. We don't have to worry about it anymore. But it's a complex social issue whose best practices are laid out by the organizations that I named. I would go to the American Veterinary Medical Association and CDC report on how to keep a community safe, which is a behavior-based, breed-neutral animal control ordinance.
And how about you, Don? Just last words in terms of summarizing this issue and recommendations for the community.
Breed-specific laws work. They're very effective. The problem with going to a behavior-based program is that is a reactive program, and it is not a proactive program. Breed-specific laws are proactive. We're trying to get ahead of the problem. We're not trying to react to it. And right now, sounds like what Anthony is proposing is more of a reactive, wait till something bad happens. Well, how does that help the victim at that point, right? It doesn't.
Well, this ends our segment on breed bans. We'd like to thank our guest, Anthony Barnett, founder and executive director of Symbiotic Behavioral Treatment Center, and he's a canine safety and tactics specialist, and Dom Byermeister, assistant city attorney for the city of Council Bluffs, Iowa, and author of Amicus Brief for DogsBite.org. In just a moment, we'll be talking about the newest addition to West Plaza, a place called Hotel Sorella.